Blog Talk Radio.
You Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, QT with you today on Switchboard Duty. Sign Guy is fresh off SCW action in Paulsville, Washington last night at La Problemitas, and he is now zooming down I-5 to BCW action at the North Portland Eagles. Rumor has it that he has the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, with him, and he will be stopping at rest stops along I-5 to leave communication messages, presumably for Dash Venture and Lila Lodge. Today I'd like to welcome our guest, Sergeant Major Alexander Paul, a native or now living in Southern California. Several run-ins he has had with the Santino brothers. Sergeant Major Paul, I'd like to welcome you to the show, and as our procedure, we have to ask our standard first question. How did you get started in this business?
Good afternoon. Getting started in the business, I was working at a super maximum prison in Indiana. One of the other prison guards had brought up to me that there was a wrestling school nearby that he was going, and that he thought I'd be a good fit since I was a big fan of wrestling and I'm a big boy. So I went to the school. He dropped out a couple weeks later, and here I am 17 years later still doing it.
Wow. Now, can you tell us the name of this Supermax prison?
It was Carlisle Correctional Facility in Carlisle, Indiana.
Wow, all right. Ooh. Now, they must, if it's a supermax prison, they get the baddest of the bad. It's kind of like that Pelican Bay prison in Northern California that gets all the Crips and blood gang members.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow, all right. Well, Sergeant Major Paul, due to your name, one of my first immediate questions that I wrote down, Did you indeed serve in the armed forces, and was it the Marine Corps?
Yes, I was a United States Marine for 15 years.
Holy smokes, wow, very nice, okay. Now, another question, do you have a high aerial assault move that you use 90% of the time where you go to the top ropes?
No, I'm 260 pounds. That's a long way down for me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Sergeant Major, what is your definition of technical skill? Because I've heard a description of you saying you possess a rare blend of strength, agility, and technical skills. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners exactly what your definition of technical skills is?
Well, technical skills for me is simply being able to take my strength and use that in a lot of groundwork, chain wrestling, telling the story as it is, knowing, I guess the easiest way for most wrestling fans to understand is I'm very old school wrestling, a la Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, Steve Austin back in the WCW days. I'm very ground oriented. You can do all the flipping and jumping you want, but once I hit you in the face and you land on your back, it's pretty much the end of it.
Ouch. Okay. Now, did you yourself have a background in wrestling in high school, or make me play football, which a lot of wrestlers have done, like Paul Orndorff and who was the Ed Too, no, it's not Ed Too Tall Jones. I'm thinking of another wrestler. Oh, well, anyway,
Big Cat.
You have a, what's that?
I said the Big Cat.
Oh, yeah, Big Cat Ernie Ladd, right.
Actually, yeah, in high school I played basketball and football, joined the Marine Corps, and I played on the Marine Corps football team as a defensive back, and then I wrestled on the Marine Corps wrestling team, and then transitioned into pro wrestling. I was rated number 2 in the world in 1998 in Taekwondo, studied Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, pro wrestling, Jeet Kune Do, and Taekwondo.
Oh, my gosh. Now, remind me never to walk down a dark alley and meet you there. Oh, my gosh. Okay, now, in your opinion, was one of the best defensive backs ever to play football, Dick Butkus?
Yes. I'm a Bob Sanders fan, Indianapolis Colts defensive back. He was, it was one of those things. Dick, he was just like Dick Butkus. Anytime there was a tackle on the field, his name was in the tackle. You know, he either caused it, he pushed the player into it, or he was the one actually doing it. So, you know, those two guys, you can't put anybody really above them.
Yes. Now, in your opinion, would Dick Butkus have made a good Marine Corps drill sergeant?
I think that's kind of an understatement.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, I'm going to say, now, just from an analysis of your videos, I'm going to say you go 6'3", 275 pounds.
6'2", 265. You're pretty close.
Oh, good. Oh, very good. I'm very good at video analysis. And I have a streak of 75 wins, only 3 losses, and 1 draw when guessing a person's height and weight. Having the characteristics are the qualifications of only being 1/2 inch off and 10 pounds within a person's weight. I officially retired last year, but I came out of retirement just to guess your height and weight. Yes.
I'll give you credit for it, because most people are way off when they guess either height or weight. So you were right on the button.
Just wait till I tell Sign Guy and Laren Golden Songbird Amos. Okay, very good. Laren, okay. Well, Sergeant Major, I saw your YouTube video entitled Sergeant Major Alexander Paul, and at the 16-second mark, you pointed to someone in the crowd, and you demanded he get in the ring. You then said, pay close attention and look straight ahead. Were you the one running the music last week? Did you announce my name? What is my name? And he mumbled something. My question is, when you asked that first question, were you running the music last week, why didn't he answer, sir, yes, sir?
Well, that was kind of the point of the ordeal, is that kid was running the music the week before. He messed my music up. He mispronounced my name. He was just all over the place. Not very professional, very disrespectful. So I thought it would behoove him to be taught a lesson. And he never messed up again after that.
I see. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners what your entrance music is? And is there any chance that your entrance music is Anchors Away by the Navy All-Star Band?
No, it is not Navy Anchors Away, because that would be a Navy theme. I am a Marine. It's Marine Corps cadence, just old-school Marine Corps cadence.
Oh, okay, Marine Corps cadence. Okay, very nice. Now, you ordered this maggot recruit to get on his face at the 51-second mark, and he did so. As he was getting down to the mat, if you freeze the frame at the 51-second mark, one can't help but notice that you have on what appears to be highly polished boots. My question is, did you get those at Parris Island Marine Corps Base or boot camp?
No, I actually went to the Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego, California.
There are
two Marine Corps Recruit Depots in the country, one in San Diego, California, one in Parris Island. Every Marine Corps recruit west of the Mississippi, and including Indianapolis, Indiana, goes to San Diego, California. Every recruit from east side of the Mississippi, except for Indianapolis, Indiana, they go to Parris Island, South Carolina.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, speaking of that Anchors Away by the Navy, were you ever deployed on a naval amphibious troop ship as part of the Marine Corps contingent?
No, I was never put on a float because I was a nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare expert. My job basically was a ground game. There was nothing for me to do on the water. We left that for the squids to do. I dealt with weapons of mass destruction. That's probably what most people would know it as.
Okay, weapons of mass destruction. So that's not really related to the SEAL training that the Navy undergoes where their underwater buds are demolition.
No, because I don't float for crap.
Oh, okay.
I don't do anything with water.
Wow, all right, okay. Well, Sergeant Major, at the 55-second mark, you said, "Push up, boy, and you stay there until I get tired." Now, to his credit, he was still in this position at the two-minute mark, and you said, "Are you getting tired yet?" To this point, he showed surprising stamina. Now, granted, his back started to sway at the 220 mark, but you didn't notice this because you were addressing some fans that were not showing you the proper respect. Had you noticed, would you have told this recruit, "Maggot, you better straighten up your spine, or I will inject some blue dye into it with a rusty Marine Corps-issued syringe"? Would you have said that?
I don't know if that would have been the statement. I would have probably had a little more graphic language for him than blue color dye, but needless to say, I would have mentioned it. But he was, I will say this, he was dying holding himself there, but he stayed there the entire time. So I got to be a little impressed with him.
Oh, okay. Well, now, granted, if you look a bit closely at that video analysis, when you were addressing some of those maggots in the crowd, he did sneak a little bit of a reprieve, and his knees touched the mat when you weren't looking. I caught that. Yes.
Yeah, well, that's not a surprise.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he did seem pretty skinny standing next to you when he entered the ring, yes. He probably went about 5'11 and only 145 pounds. He definitely needed toughening up.
Very much so. But I could say that for probably every fan in the crowd. Either they're just too skinny or too fat. But, you know, we can whip people into shape if they want it.
Okay. All right. Now, for our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners, can you tell them when exactly you went through boot camp, and was it at Parris Island?
No, it was at I went to Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego, California in 1995.
Ooh, 1995. Okay. So you missed the humidity and sand fleas that are known to infest Parris Island.
Yeah, I decided I would rather run up mountains and climb mountains than have to be bitten by sand fleas.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Sergeant Major, at the 106 mark of the video, you said your job was to ensure that professional wrestling is returned to its days of glory. My question is, in what era would you like to see it return to most? Would it be the first golden age in the late 19th century and early 20th with such wrestlers as Farmer Burns, Frank Gotch, and George Hackenschmidt? or maybe the 20s and 30s with wrestlers such as Billy Sandel, Toots Montt, and Ed the Strangler Lewis?
When I think of the glory days, I think of even newer than that. I'm thinking more early NWA, WWWF time, when wrestling still had the mystique but was coming more in the limelight. When wrestling originally started, and in those eras that you're talking about, there was a lot of shoot wrestling going on. And for the fans that don't know what I mean, it's more amateur style wrestling, a la Olympics, high school, college type wrestling that was transitioning into a pro wrestling that we would know in the 80s and 90s. Where we're at today is completely different than anything else in the history of our business. But that time was a little more drab, a little more dry, until you had people come along such as Gorgeous George, superstar Billy Graham, the flamboyance, the not only doing the moves, the technical that you spoke earlier, not only telling the story that we're in the ring to do, but the it factor, the thing that makes fans want to come watch us, the bigger than life. When people come to watch me in the ring, they come to watch me because I'm bigger than life. And we've lost that in today's era, and I feel that we need to get back to that. When Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant packed the arena, yes, Randy Savage and Ricky Steamboat had the best match technically on the card. It was flawless. It was beautiful. It was great to us wrestlers. What did the fans pay to see? The fans paid to see a giant versus a monster. And that's what it was about. It was about not only being technically sound and not only being able to tell the story, but it's also being bigger than life. And we've lost that. You know, today's fans want the people in the ring to look like them. And that's not that's not what we're about. We're about being bigger than life.
Yes, I think you also would appreciate and hearken back to the days of the territorial days of the 60s and 70s. The best example territorial-wise that I can give is Portland Wrestling back in the 60s and 70s. You had manager Don Owens, and he had such immense talent come through there, like Governor Jesse Ventura, who was a Navy SEAL. You had people like Ed Wiskowski, Playboy Buddy Rose, a young Roddy Piper, and perhaps the Apache Bull Ramis. The storylines were well entrenched in this 1970s era style wrestling, and they had the emphasis on technical wrestling, you know, not quite as fast-paced and high-flying. Well, you did when you got Jimmy Snuka coming through there. Were you a big fan, and do you ever go on YouTube and look up the golden era of what I consider Northwest Wrestling back in the 70s with Don Owen as manager?
Not really. I'm so limited on my time that when I study film, I have to study film of my next opponent, and I have to and I try to stick with wrestlers that were gauged in my style of wrestling. Not saying that there's anything wrong with anybody else's style of wrestling. It's just I'm so very limited on time with the wrestling and the acting and the running the businesses that I have to really balance everything out. So I stick with wrestlers that are power and technique all together.
Oh, okay, and yes, I'd like to point out to our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners that before you came on the air, you mentioned that you had you are now breaking into the Hollywood acting scene. Can you tell us some of the roles that you have had?
I've done some work on shows like Sons of Anarchy before it went off the air, Fear the Walking Dead. There's an Avengers Grimm movie on Netflix. I'm in there as Lou Ferrigno's bodyguard henchman kind of deal. I've done several music videos, some live theater in Hollywood, that kind of stuff.
Wow, all right. For your role on Sons of Anarchy, do you think that your work with the Supermax prison in Indiana helped you with this role?
Oddly enough, not. I didn't play a biker or anything. I actually played a businessman. So I was in a three-piece suit like a lawyer. So everything that I normally play in the film, I was the exact opposite on the show.
Wow, fantastic. All right, all right. And how many commercials have you had, like one-minute commercials?
I did a commercial for Foot Locker with the center from the New Orleans, what's their basketball team down in New Orleans?
Pelicans.
Pelicans, yeah. Their center, we did a basketball commercial, shoe commercial for him. I was his bodyguard, which seemed odd because he's like 7'1". So I'm a lot wider than he is, but he had to duck to come in the door, so... I think that was the only commercial I did off the top of my head.
Wow, did you threaten to take out one of those Foot Locker shoes and hit him with it like a object?
Sure.
Oh.
For an object shoe? No, nothing like that.
Well, now, I know that guy's 7'1", about the size of Wilt Chamberlain. But being a bodyguard to him and being a bodyguard to Lou Ferrigno, well, what's Lou Ferrigno now? Is he in his mid-60s?
I believe Lou is 64 now.
Oh, wow.
I think his birthday just passed a few weeks ago. I think he's 64, but I'm not. I won't swear to that. So nobody on the radio be sending me no messages saying I'm completely wrong because I think he's somewhere in that realm.
Wow, he also is very wide in the shoulder and narrow in the waist, isn't he? Even at 64.
Very much.
Oh,
very
okay.
much.
Holy smokes. All right. Well, Sergeant
yeah,
Major...
Yeah, he looks great for his age.
Oh, he does, huh?
Oh, yeah, he
wow.
looks great for his age. Yeah, definitely.
Now, that brings up the question. Now, I forget his name, but who... Oh, yeah, Jack LaLanne. The fitness person that started out the first series of fitness videos for the housewife and pretty much for the houseman or businessman back in the 50s. Now, ever since he was since he was like 15 or 16, he changed his diet to mostly fruits and beans. And if he had any meat at all, it was fish. No chicken at all, and he did this decade upon decade, mostly fruit juices and veggies. And even at the age in his early 70s, he was towing rowboats in the San Francisco Bay from Alcatraz to the shore. Amazing feats of strength by this guy. He could still do 70 push-ups at the age of 70. Were you a big fan of Jack LaLanne?
Oh, very much so. I watched all his shows. They used to replay him, the black and white, and then when it went into Technicolor, they used to replay him on one of the little local television, syndicated local television stations where I came from. So, yeah, I got a lot into it. Loved the blue suit that he used to wear all the time. I mean, anybody in the fitness world that doesn't know who Jack LaLanne is, then they've not really researched or looked into their career, because Jack LaLanne's pretty much between Jack LaLanne and Sandow, those are the two pioneers of what we do today. Today's generation look back and they see Arnold and Lou, but the reality is it goes back farther. You know, strongmen such as Bill Kazmaier, who also became a pro wrestler in the NWA days. That generation they had no help. There was no creatine, no steroids, no none of that. They did it with milk, beans, and bread.
Yes, and who was the Canadian strongman who was known as one of the strongest men in the world back in the 70s, I believe?
Well, I know after Bill Kazmaier retired from World's Strongest Man competition, Mark Cakes took over as the World's Strongest Man for, I think it was only 1 year he won.
Oh, okay. Now, you mentioned Lou Ferrigno and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Were you also a big fan of bodybuilder Pedro Segovia, the man from Cuba that beat Arnold for the Mr. Universe title in 69?
I wasn't a fan of his, but I was a very big fan of, now it's on top, off the top of my head, I can't think of his name, the first guy to beat him at the Olympia, beat Arnold at the Olympia. Of course, the fans, somebody at the fans right now is screaming at the radio the name, but I can't think of his name. But I was always a big fan of his because he, Arnold was great, but this guy had a freakishly small waist and just wide as you could be at the top. He was insane.
Oh, well, that was Cuban weightlifter Pedro Segovia. Yes, I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing his last name wrong, but Arnold, in his autobiography, told stories about going up against him in 69 and 70. And this guy would just do wake up, and the first thing he'd do out of bed is 100 push-ups, and then he'd do like six or seven sets of chin-ups, about 20 each, and that was before he even went to breakfast. And the guy had a straight shoot job, a civilian job, when he wasn't bodybuilding, of working in a metal factory with lathes and high heat. So he'd be always sweating all the time and working with these heavy mounds of steel. And so he'd sweat out all his water weight during the day in his steel factory job and then just go home and train for the fifth time. Yes, Pedro Segovia. I know I got his first name right. Yes, he was.
Right, right.
Was
that was during the time that Arnold was in the Mr. Universe. I was speaking of Sergio Oliva in the Olympia contest.
Sergio Oliva.
Yeah. Right. That's when Arnold said that he walked in and he saw Sergio and said to himself, "I can't beat him," and lost that contest and realized that the moment he said he couldn't beat him, he knew he couldn't. And that's kind of a lifelong thought that I have. One of my own personal philosophies is if you can't, you want the guy who says he can't do it and the guy who says he can do it probably are both right.
Yes, yes, I remember now. It was that person. Arnold said that when he walked into the contest, he was slinging a black overcoat over his shoulder, and Arnold said to him, "How's it going today, champ? Are you feeling good?" And he replied, "Man, they're going to see something they've never seen today, baby." And he knew Arnold was looking at him in his civilian clothes. And he kind of flexed his lats, and Arnold said, "They look like something out of a cartoon, like a manta ray." And he followed him downstairs. He was following either him downstairs, and he got a look at his back, and he goes, "I can't win today." Yes, I remember that.
Very much, yep.
Okay. Well, Sergeant Major, getting back to that YouTube video that I saw you in, at the 5:30 mark, you pointed to a heckler in the crowd that had bad bathing habits and said, "See, that's the thing. You and everyone like you have no respect for anybody. That way, that's why this godforsaken country is where it's at, because pieces of trash like you can't get a job and can't get out of their parents' basement and won't quit playing video games." My question is, were you out of your parents' basement by the time seventh grade started in the summer, and were you mowing lawns, raking leaves, selling golf balls you found on the local golf course, and washing windows? And did this teach you that you have to earn money and with it, respect.
No, I'm from a small town in Indiana, so there's no golf clubs and golf balls and all that stuff. When I was in the seventh grade, and I was going into high school, I was working in cornfields, detaffling, throwing watermelons and cantaloupe, hay, digging ditches, digging post holes, a lot of work with. It was kind of my original workout program. When I was growing up, there was no such thing as gyms in Indiana. YMCA was about all you could get, and that was a good 3 hours from where I lived. So there were no weights. There was no bench pressing. There was none of that. So I started working out by working. So I would move tire irons railroad ties. I would dig ditches. But instead of using wheelbarrows, I would fill 5 gallon buckets, and I would carry the dirt from place to place, chopping down trees, chopping stumps out of the ground, anything that was some kind of physical labor. I would start deadlifting. I started with my dad's riding lawnmower, picking up the rear end of the lawnmower. And my dad used to have these little cars, Honda Civic, not Civics, but the old Rabbits, the Gremlins, those little cars from the 70s and 80s. And I would pick up, those had the old metal bumpers. For those of you that are old enough, they had the stand jacks that hooked in the bumper, and you just jacked it up, and it didn't go under the car, it just hooked into the bumper. So they had the old metal bumpers, so you just put cloths in your hand, and you deadlift the rear end of the car. And things of that sort. So no golf balls. I did mow lawns and stuff of that sort, but it was more digging ditches and moving logs and bricks. One of my dad's favorite workout routines for me was, there was a stack of cement bricks, move it to one side of the yard, which is, there was about an acre of land, so you carry it across the acre of land, and you put the pile there, and then you move the pile back. I don't know if he meant it as a workout routine or just to keep me out of trouble, keep me busy, to keep me out of trouble, but either way, it worked. So I'd do curls with bricks and, you know, things of that sort until I joined the Marine Corps and went off. But, yeah, I was out of my parents' basement really early. It was all about work and staying busy.
All right. Well, was your parents' basement nice? And did it have wood paneling and perhaps a trophy-sized trout mounted on the wall? Yes.
No. Actually, we didn't have a basement. I lived in a lovely trailer park in a trailer. Did have wood paneling, but there's no trout. No, we didn't fish. We didn't hunt. There was nothing like that. It was just work. Nothing fancy. I grew up in trailer parks and, not having anything, which I guess helps push you to work hard to have a lot more as you get older.
Wow, all right. Now, Sergeant Major, on the sitcom show, The 70s Show, Fez, Kelso, Hyde, and the other kids would sit in a circle, and a strange cloud would appear, and they would start acting goofy. But they never did this when Red Foreman was around. And speaking of which, Red Foreman achieved the rank of Chief Petty Officer, or E7, and he punched a jarhead at a USO dance who insulted the soon-to-be Mrs. Red Foreman. How do you think you would have done in a Hell in a Cell match with Chief Petty Officer Red Foreman of the 70s show?
Red did actually catch him in the circle one time smoking the weird cloud of smoke that was coming. That was actually one of my favorite shows for all the years that it was on. It's hard to say, but, you know, what is Red? He's 5'10", 175 pounds, soaking wet, holding a brick. So
yes.
I'm literally almost double his size, so I think I could probably fare pretty well. I've been punched in the face a lot by a lot bigger men, so, you know, I think the only person I wouldn't want to punch me in the face is Mike Tyson. Other than that, I'm okay.
Oh, okay. Well, now, to give him credit, Mike Tyson seems to have mellowed with medication now. You know, and he may have lost a step and a little bit of leverage. Still a formidable guy, probably. But, you know, I would rather face, well, Mike Tyson today than Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes was a very good boxer.
Oh, yeah. Larry Holmes was great. Larry Holmes is very underrated. I think in his time, he was coming out of the shadow of Muhammad Ali. When you come out of a shadow like that, you're unfortunately, you know, it's kind of like in NBA basketball. All the champions that came after the Chicago Bulls those few years afterwards, you weren't really the champion. You're only the champion because the Bulls were no longer playing. Larry Holmes was only the champion because Muhammad Ali was too old to fight. You know, so there's always that asterisk next to his name was Larry Holmes as good as he – as good of a champion as Ali was. Well, the reality was, Holmes was a great champion. Could he have really beaten Ali in Ali's prime? Hey, you know, nobody really knows because everybody's prime is different. Different generations, different styles of, you know, so.
True. True. I think I'd give the edge to Holmes because if you look at his videos, I think he had just as good a jab as Ali. Plus, he had maybe not the I don't know about the foot speed, but he had size and weight over Ali and leverage, and he could take a punch.
But it wasn't Larry what Holmes, made Ali great. What made Ali great wasn't. What made Ali great wasn't his ability to fight, because there were always great fighters. It wasn't his ability to take a punch or fast feet. It was all that combined, but it was his mind. He was smarter than everybody else. He played the game. He would get them frustrated. Just like we talked about with Arnold and Sergio, he would convince the other fighter they had already lost before they ever got to the fight. Just George Foreman.
That's true. He did seem to do a number on George Foreman. However, there was one fighter that had military experience that did not fear Ali, had three fights with him, and I believe, and I've studied video of this, and I truly believe he won two out of the three, was Ken Norton.
Yes. Yes, agreed.
Yes, Ken Norton, he broke Ali's jaw, won the first fight, and I think it was the second or third, but I think I give Norton the edge, but since it was Ali, they give it to Ali. Yes.
Right, because you got in boxing, MMA, wrestling, you know, champions, you have to decisively beat a champion. If you're going to leave it to a coin toss, yeah, you leave it to a coin toss with the judges, they're always going to give the edge to the champion because he's the champion. He's there for a reason. So if you don't decisively beat the champion, then you're not the champ.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, now you said you're from Indiana. Is it true that Olympic gold medalist and only one time defeated in the NCAA wrestling program, Dan Gable, wasn't he from Indiana?
No, I believe Dan Gable was from Iowa, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, he wrestled for Iowa. He probably grew up in Iowa. Yes. My question
I
is,
I don't remember
was Dan Gable and was he an inspiration to you when you were on the Marine Corps wrestling program?
Oddly enough, no. My inspirations have always been martial arts based. So even though it was wrestling, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu played a lot in it. I've been watching the UFC since before when it wasn't even allowed to be on pay-per-view in the 90s and late 90s when it first started. It was you know, I watched it on the VHS and tapes, and anytime you could get it, you know, long before, and telling the age here, my age here, you know, before internet, before YouTube and all that stuff, you just had to subsequently find videos of these events. So it was more, guys like Hoist Gracie and those individuals that inspired my groundwork more than actual the wrestlers. And judo, like Ronda Rousey, I was always a big fan of Ronda Rousey's all the way through the Olympics, that kind of stuff. So although wrestling did play big, and I did watch wrestling in the Olympics, I never really looked to those guys as inspiration for my mat work.
Oh, okay. All right. Say if you could travel back in time in a time machine and you had a choice, who would you rather work with, Chuck Norris or Bruce Lee?
Probably Bruce Lee.
Okay.
I would say that because Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee were on the level of martial arts. They had the same drive. But Bruce Lee also included physical fitness in it. Chuck Norris was never ripped. Chuck Norris never had six-pack abs. He never had muscular arms. He was just really good at the martial arts. So you can go back to, you know, the movies where it was Chuck Norris versus Bruce Lee. Chuck had his shirt off, but he was not an impressive physique. Where Bruce Lee was always impressive. He was always cut to the gills. He looked like he was cut by a diamond, you know. So I would have to venture that I'd prefer to work with or to be trained by Bruce Lee just for the simple fact that, well, he's the greatest martial arts artist in history, but also his physical fitness was a big driving force in his training. And, you know, for me, as you and I have spoke before, my training is very long and very extensive on a regular basis. So I would have to go with Bruce Lee.
Would you agree with the saying that Bruce Lee is a smaller version of Ravishing Rick Rude?
Well, physique-wise, I would say, yeah, that's probably safe to say. I think Bruce Lee went more of a – his goal was more of a less body fat. He wasn't
Yes.
looking for bigger, thicker muscles because bigger, thicker muscles made it harder for him to move because he had a small frame anyway. So where I have a big frame, I'm tall, that myth of big bones, you're not really big. There's no such thing as big bone, but I have a big frame, so I can carry large amounts of muscle and still be mobile. I can still sprint. I can still jump. Where for Bruce Lee, having a smaller frame, if he'd put in too much muscle on, and in Ravishing Rick Rude's case, if Bruce Lee had had the amount of muscle that Rude had, Bruce Lee would have been able to move very well. And of course, we look at Ravishing Rick Rude compared to guys such as the Ultimate Warrior, Scott Steiner, you know, those guys that are just, and you look at Rude and you say, well, he's kind of small. But in reality, he was a really huge man. He was really big and very ripped. But compared to that generation of monster wrestlers, he looked small. So he was still a big, big guy.
Yeah, he went to measure up to, say, someone like King Kong Bundy or Bam Bam Bigelow.
Well, that's a whole different world. No, you're talking
yes.
Fat versus ripped muscle. So, you know,
yes.
Different worlds, different type. Now, Vader is a good indication. He does have a lot of fat on his body, but he was very, very muscular. He was a football player, too. So he was very strong, very muscular, but he had a lot of fat. He just had a nice, big, fat cushion around him.
That's true. However, I did see Bam Bam Bigelow on several occasions do a cartwheel in the ring. Pretty scary.
Yeah,
Yes.
And that moonsault he did, that would scare the crap out of me if I thought he was going to land on me.
yes. Yeah, that would be like Big Mama on Married with Children going to the top turnbuckle and body splashing Al Bundy, who was laying in the ring.
Yeah.
Do you remember that, where
yeah.
and Al Bundy looked into the camera and said, good night?
No, I was never I don't really have a discernible sense of humor. So slapstick comedy such as Will Ferrell and the Married with Children show and stuff like that, really, I don't find that stuff funny. I don't see the humor in it. So I never really watched that show. I mean, I know of it. I've seen clips from it. You know, you pass it when you're flipping through the stations now. I think it's on, where I live, it's on every morning around 10 o'clock in the morning, but I don't really watch that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Sergeant Major, would you ever consider making a martial arts movie at a maximum security prison setting, maybe one called Enter the Fist?
Sure. If somebody wants to make that movie, I'll do it. I will do, you know. I never mind beating people up.
Oh, okay. Well, now you can take that title several ways. It could be X-rated, or it could be more like PG, you know, or R. Yes. Okay, Enter the
Fist.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, in the X-rated part, I'll pass on that, but we can sell it to some people in Van Nuys and see if they want it.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, Sergeant Major, if you could travel back in time, a time machine, say like 1945, and be present at the Nuremberg trials, and you could, let's say, travel with one WWE superstar and set up a wrestling match with Hermann Göring, head of the Luftwaffe, would your top choice to face Hermann Göring be Mick Foley or Dude Love?
I don't have the foggiest clue on that one. I would probably say Mick Foley, because Dude Love was really, really annoying and a terrible character in my eyes. And this is nothing against Mick Foley, but I was never a Mick Foley fan. I didn't find his branch of wrestling entertaining. But in turn, I'm saying this is not a discredit to him or anything else, but I wasn't an ECW fan either. I am a wrestler. I don't believe in hitting people with light bulbs, jumping off scaffolds onto tacks, baseball bats wrapped in wire. That's not wrestling. That I don't know what you want to call that. That hardcore stuff is not me. I refuse to do it. To me, it's not wrestling. You know, in the days, and we go back into talking about the past, in the days of the NWA, the WWWF, the AWA, which when I started, I came in the AWA in their resurgence, because they had that little window for a few years where they were trying to get back on track. And I started in a small division of that AWA brand. And in those times, you wrestled your matches. Every time you wrestled, it was a wrestling match. The only time that you added steel cage, tables, or anything of that sort was the final match, when neither guy could ever win and you needed something to either keep everybody out of the match so that the two guys can wrestle by themselves and nobody else could interfere, or you needed some type of enforcement object that when one got it, the other paid the price, because physically they were one in the same. You know, one, it was a chess match, and they could never, neither one could win, so we're going to throw a table into the mix or whatever. So in those times, those kind of matches were only to prove a point. It was only when nothing else would work would we use a steel cage. Nowadays, you have entire shows with that on there. And again, I'm not discrediting McFoley because he's had a great career. He's you know, books, all that other stuff. ECW is a big brand. WWE tried to bring it back several times, didn't work because it's not wrestling to me. And this is just my personal opinion again, but that's not wrestling. And that's not what I want to see. I want to see wrestling. I want the story to be told. I want to know what's going on. How much of a story is it to take a light bulb and smash somebody in the face with it? It's not. It's fans wanting to see how much pain we will inflict on ourselves. Well, that's not good. That's not what wrestling's about. And the fact that the fans live for that these days is very disturbing.
Yes, it's also disturbing that these young kids are finally getting outside and calling exercise following a Pokemon screen and walking into traffic and assorted furniture.
Yeah. Where did this come from? This is like 4 days old all of a sudden, and now it's the biggest story. But, and again, here, I don't want to go off on a political rant on a wrestling show or anything of that sort, but let's be realistic. We got terrorism attacks all over the world. We have two presidential candidates that neither one of them really are inspiring to our country. One of them has proven that she's broken laws that other people have gone to prison for, but she's okay with. She's going to become president. Case in point, you got Richard Nixon. He erased 15 seconds of video of phone conversation. He had to give up the presidency. She's erased thousands of emails, and she's running for president. Come on, let's be realistic. Pokemon is a distraction. Now all of a sudden, all we care about is Pokemon. What about all the 85 people who died yesterday in London or Paris or which I don't even remember which city it was now?
Paris,
you know,
yeah.
It's funny how every time something major happens, some weird little thing pops up that's a distraction. Grown people,
that's true,
who need to be finding jobs instead of finding Pokemon. You know, I posted on Facebook the other day, you know, I'm not going to find Pokemons because I'm not 10 years old and I got stuff to do. You know, so I don't even know what the question was originally. And I didn't mean to go on a rant there, but the reality is you can't be distracted by the crap. So, but we are. It's amazing how distracted our country is, and they miss the forest for the tree, or the tree for the forest, whichever.
Well, yes, we've come all the way from, take for example, you working in the cornfields and lifting bricks as curls, and, you know, chopping down corn, you know, and wheel bearing to Pokemon. They're quite the opposite ends of the spectrum. Yes.
Yeah,
yes, I don't
very
know
much.
What happened there.
I don't know. And we've become, and this goes back to what you were talking about in my video, and I was talking about the lazy fat people in the audience. Well, here's the reality is, you know, the problem with pro wrestling today is that lazy fat person that's sitting in the crowd. They look at me and they want to claim whatever, and they want to call me names and they want to yell at me. And that's fine. That's what I'm here for. I'm a bad guy. I'm a heel. I've been a heel for a long time. I know you don't like me, and I don't really give a crap that you don't like me. But here's the reality is you pay money to come see me. But the problem is nowadays that fat, lazy person in the front audience also wants the person in the ring to be fat and lazy too. They want them to be skinny as crap or fat as can be because it makes them feel good that somebody like them is in the ring. But you want to pay – if I want to see fat people, I don't want to go to the ring. I don't want to pay to see it. I can go to Walmart. You know,
yes.
We have a very, very distorted view in pro wrestling and the world and in our society of what's right and what's not. And it's just amazing that people – and you know, I pick on Pokemon. But you know what? I'm going to say this. At least they're outside walking. For the love of God, some of these people have not seen daylight in years because they sit in their parents' basement playing video games all day long. They get up to order pizza and whatever else, we have an obesity epidemic in this country that's beyond, that's unfathomable. If you told somebody in the 50s that our country would be 65 to 70% fat people, they would be like, you're lying. There's no way we can turn that big of a corner. You know, but at least with the Pokemons, hey, you know, if you're dumb enough to walk in the traffic, then survival of the fittest, Darwinism, right? If you're that dumb, that's your own fault. But the reality is, at least they're outside walking. You know, I'll give them that. At least it's some kind of exercise, even if it is chasing an invisible animal that's non-existent, you know.
Well said. Well, Sergeant Major, we've got about 3 minutes left. I'm going to give you this time to plug and promote anything you want, your favorite plant, your favorite television show, or maybe give a nod to former famed Marine Corps sniper Carlos Hathcock, the one the Viet Cong called White Feather, if you want to give out a shout-out to him, one of our most famous Marine Corps snipers in history. I'll let you do so. You can go now. Yes.
All right. Well, yeah, Charles was great historically in the Marine Corps, but, you know, this is a wrestling show, and individuals don't really want to hear about Marine Corps history, and if they do, they can always look me up on Facebook under Sergeant Major Alexander Paul or my acting Facebook, which is Paul Kirshner, which is my actual shoot name. I don't care to give that out because it doesn't matter, because if you're looking at movies and stuff and you look for my name in the credits, it won't be Sergeant Major Alexander Paul. It will be Paul Kirshner. And that's K-E-A-R-S-C-H-N-E-R. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram. My next upcoming show will be Future Stars of Wrestling in Las Vegas. It will be at the Orleans Arena. It is the Super Toy Con 2016. It is a charity event to raise toys for children for the upcoming holidays. It's Friday, August 5th, 6th, and 7th. There are four shows, 4 p.m. I believe it's 7 p.m. on the 5th, 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. on the 6th, which is Saturday, and 7 p.m. or 1 p.m. on the 7th, which is Sunday. So there are four shows. It is for the benefit of children. So if you are in the Las Vegas area, please come out and enjoy the show at the Orleans Arena. And that's pretty much it. You know, I also am working on my YouTube channel for working out. You should be able to soon be seeing videos of workout tips, anything like that. If you have any questions that you'd like about working out or wrestling or anything of that sort, you can shoot me a message and I will help you out. I'm also helping train at Santino Brothers in Bell Gardens, California, right outside Los Angeles. It was one of the best schools in the state of California, and actually I've been all over the country. It's one of the best schools in the country, so you can go ahead if you're in the area and you'd like to work out, or if you'd like to attend the school as a first time, you can contact Joey Chaos at Santino Brothers. Just plug it in the Google and it'll pop up. It's one of the best schools. I'll be in and out of there. There's several trainers there. You have a good combined 80 to 100 years worth of veterans training there, so you have a lot of good information. And if you need any of that information, you can hit me at Facebook or Instagram under Paul Kirshner or Sergeant Major Alexander Paul.
All right. Well, Sergeant Major, it's been a pleasure having you on Turnbuckle Turmoil. I will tell Sign Guy hello for you, and we'd like you back on in the future, if possible. And as a former military person myself, I give you a big hoorah and good luck with your training. Yes. Thank you.
Hoorah. You have a good day.
You too. Oh, okay. No, I don't want that. Okay. Oh, come on.